back again for another week on the Where Eagles Dare podcast. And unfortunately,
oh no! We suck again!
So that's the truth. Oh no!
Oh no! We suck again!
And that's how it goes. Yeah, so unfortunately, we're back under another defeat that we have to deal with and talk about here on the Where Eagles Dare podcast. It's getting old.
Yeah, man. I mean, at least we knew going into this one that it was going to be tough. That if we were smiling, we would have been cheesing come today, and we would have beat the Bucks. So, and luckily, we broke our three-game losing streak before going into that match. I think it kind of softened the blow a little bit going against such an efficient team like the Bucks, man.
Well, we've definitely got a lot to talk about as far as this game goes. And it, you know, it wasn't what we wanted going in on a Thursday night, prime time, the whole world watching. And that's the hard, you know, kind of the hard part. You know, most football fans are going to be watching us. So we're showing what we got. And it was just a big, they laid an egg, at least for the first half. They laid a complete and total egg in that game. And so, you know, I want to mention, we normally, like on the podcast, we normally, what we do is we break down the highlights. We're not going to do that this week. What we're going to do is try to do something a little bit different. We're just going to talk about the game as you and I normally do, Tubby, how we normally do after something like this, and just break it down. So I mentioned to you earlier that hey, I was there. I was actually out seeing it with friends, and the friend that I was with was a Cowboys fan. So we had to deal, you know, had to deal with that because, you know, every time they scored, it just looks bad. It was hard to pinpoint what exactly was going wrong. And there's so much to discuss when you break it down. I've watched the game three times now, and it doesn't get any better each time you watch it. Let me tell you, it doesn't change. The ending doesn't change. But I wanted to see, try to figure out, because I'm like, how was it so bad? When you look at like the first half numbers and they had maybe 50 yards of offense and the defense had given up 21 points and kind of let the Bucks come down at will, was it really bad on both sides of the ball, or what was it? What do you think it was that really stunk up the joint for the Eagles versus the Bucks this week?
Our offense, man. Our offense, you know, when you look at time of possession, I think they doubled us up. I know we talk about, you know, just coming out, but like that whole first half, they had about 5-3 and outs there. I mean, the first drive, scored a touchdown, cool, we're rolling. But, you know, like we always talked about, those are those scripted plays. First or second drive, those plays have been scripted. Those first 15 plays or so have been scripted. So they've been well drilled. So you kind of expect your team to do or have some efficiency in those first couple drives, which they did. But then everything after that was just inconsistency, man, on the offense, you know. And then if you play in a team like the Bucks, they'll start wearing you down very quickly. If you're not getting first downs, which, you know, it's like getting five turnovers, giving the Bucks the ball back, you know, three and out, and our defense is gassed at that point. I think that's why we didn't have any sacks, because they were on the field for about 40 minutes. So, yeah, man, what you think?
I think we saw the same thing. It's interesting that you say that about the opening drive for most teams. That, you know, those plays are scripted and you have to be ready for that and kind of weather that storm. Unfortunately for us, they mentioned during the game that the Eagles have allowed the most points on opening drives this year, 27, after the Bucks scored the opening touchdown. That's more than anybody in the league. You got to hang a little bit of it on the defense, but you're right. It comes down to the multiple three and outs. It just can't happen that badly, where you're getting on the field and either it's a combination of bad play calling or misreads or overthrows or underthrows, bad decision making, bad offensive line play, not running the ball. I mean, there's so many things to pinpoint.
So many things.
And I think I texted you on Sunday and I just said, I'm so disappointed right now. I don't know where they go from here. And it, right. and so when we come in here today to talk about it, it's like I don't really want to pick apart the individual highlights. I just want to talk about, you know, things that we saw as a whole. Like in the first quarter, of course, with the Bucks' first drive, they just came down the field at will. One of the things I noticed is that it, again, with Jonathan Gannon's defense, they don't want to give up the big play. I mean, that's known now throughout the league that this is a bend but don't break defense. Against Carolina, they played a little bit more pressure because they didn't fear Sam Darnold. They didn't fear the big play downfield. But then you get up against Tom Brady and you could see clearly, if you watch the field, one of the things that just kills me when I watch this team on defense is the ball snapped, and as soon as those receivers take off downfield, everybody clears out. Everybody clears out, and the middle sits wide open. They play that quarters defense, and they back up. And I don't know how many times it happened with Brate and Howard and Fournette, where Brady just went, I'll take what you give me, and I'm going to throw a five-yard pass to Fournette, and he's going to run it another 5 yards.
And it's, right, and to your point on the bend but don't break, you know, we have weird stats on our defense that can confuse you. You look at our total yards per game passing, right? You go, man, these guys are ranked fifth in the league. You look at how much we're giving up per pass, you know, 6.7. You like, man, that's pretty good. But it's the bend. Mm-hmm. We're giving up 7 yards a clip on a team like the Bucs. Let's take a team like the Bucs, for instance. When you line up, when you look at their offense, it's not a lot of gaps. When you look at Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, who had 9 catches. You know, we shut Evans down, but you still have to pay attention to him every single snap. He's a touchdown threat. And you have a beast of a back in Fournette in the backfield. And we already have very small linebackers in Singleton and Edwards. So, you know, just gets our defense head on a swivel. And when the offense isn't making plays, I go right back to that. Offense isn't making plays. It just makes things look worse. So, you know, we still didn't give up our 300. You know, that's what we've been keeping a lot of passing teams under 300. But we've just been bending, and they've just been going down the field. We also ranked, I think, 28th or 29th in efficiency. Like where teams are efficient against us, completing almost over 90%+ of their passes on us, mm-hmm. because you can get 5 yards a clip, and we'll give you 5 yards. It's almost like we'll give you 5 yards, just don't beat us deep. And that's the defense we've been playing, and teams know that they can run on us and throw short with high efficiency against us. And I think that's how we've been losing games. In a nutshell, you know.
And this game was exactly like that. This game was like all the other games that we've seen, especially on a defensive side of the ball, except maybe Carolina and some of Atlanta. I think Atlanta was one of those games where Atlanta didn't really know what they didn't have a lot of game film to see Gannon's defense. So they kind of were able to victimize him with those zone blitzes and kind of playing those off zones. But we don't put any pressure on the quarterback. And that was one thing that it's I'm having a hard time dealing with from a defensive side of the ball, is that just rushing the four down linemen. It doesn't move quarterbacks off their spot. It doesn't make them uncomfortable. And then you combine that by running that quarters bend but don't break defense. So basically what you're saying is that we're going to give you all the time in the world. We're going to give you open space to make your completions. We just ask that you don't score touchdowns on us. But that's, you know, so what ends up happening is you lose the time of possession battle, because we've seen teams just take these long 10, 11 play drives. And it was the same thing with the Bucs on Thursday night. And then they come away with 7, 8, 9, you know, minute drives. And then you get what we have. Like you said, it was the time of possession for the Eagles was 20 minutes. 20 minutes versus 39 for the Bucs. We've lost the time of possession battle every single game this year, but this was by far the worst. And it was because you go up against a team that's smart like Brady, and they know what you're going to give them. They're not going to throw down the field to Brown and Howard. They're going to throw underneath. And so, and they did, and those guys still picked us apart. It was frustrating. Like their opening drive, you know, coming down the field, it just seemed like there was no will. And I know we've mentioned this before, and I don't want to make this about the defense, because I still agree with you that the defense was not the problem in this game. It's just a problem, and I think a big part of that is
the defense is the symptom,
right? It boils down to it when we need stops, they need to be able to get them. But then if the offense doesn't do anything with the ball, then there's no point. And I think that you're right. I think initially, when I look back at the game as a whole, I said to myself, giving up 28 points overall, they didn't play that bad. But in the first quarter, that giving up that first drive, like you said, one of the plays that bothered me, and that was the touchdown itself to O.J. Howard, was where they used Ryan Kerrigan as a zone blitzer, and they put him out in coverage. Now, I've been saying for a while that's what they should be doing. The problem is I never said Ryan Kerrigan should be the guy that should be covering O.J. Howard in the end zone on his own blitz. I think they do need to mix up their blitz packages and do more pressures like that. But that put Kerrigan in a really bad spot. He's not as young as he used to be, to able to make plays like that, and you had O.J. Howard wide open in the end zone. So the concept is there, but the execution is not, and that was kind of disappointing.
That's a good point, and I will mention, I mean, Brady did a hell of a touch pass on that too. You know, that ball still came in a little high because, you know, Kerrigan's in that area. I think he's like 6'5", 6'4", 6'5". He's a big dude. But, I mean, like you said, it's going to be tough for him to get out there with O.J. Howard on coverage. But, you know, if you man your space, you know, you should be able to get there. You know, we're only talking about a 7-yard drop back at tops. You know, we expect a professional athlete to be able to get out there in space. And Kerrigan has the juice, but, hell, Kerrigan went 4 games without registering a stat. I think it was probably 3 games.
Yeah.
Maybe the Carolina game, I think he had, like, his first assist or tackle. So, I feel you, and he is at the end. But, I'd like to see maybe Sweat out there.
Didn't see a lot of Sweat this game, which was interesting. Some, but we saw.
We didn't get any sacks, so we didn't see a lot of our defensive line. Mm. Period, man. 0 sacks. You know, you're never going to beat Brady if you don't knock him down. You're never, ever, ever going to beat Brady. The formula is to knock him down a few times and get him to start throwing the ball a little high or a little faster. If you don't do that, I mean, Brady was back there just eating sunflower seeds, throwing the ball to AB, and it was just easy.
One of the things that annoyed me, but it was true. I think it was near the end of the first quarter. Troy Aikman commented that it looks like Brady's running 7-on-7 drills right now. It's like there is no pressure in his face. They're only rushing 4, and the Eagles have done that all year. And it reminds me of that Schwartz. That's why I think Gannon's a little Schwartz 2.0. That was Schwartz's philosophy. If I can't get there with my front 4, then there's no point, you know. And I'm like, that. I get it. You don't want to leave the middle exposed, but you have to. There's got to be more. There are other teams that do this so much better. Now, granted, and we've said it all year long, linebackers are a problem. The linebackers cannot stop the run. I don't know how many times I saw Singleton get killed on screenplays. Did you see O.J. Howard just manhandle him 2 or 3 times on screenplays, just coming through the line? And so Singleton can see the play. He can see it develop, but he can't tackle O.J. Howard. O.J. Howard, one of the plays, stiff-armed him into the ground like the Bills-Norman play when Derrick Henry took out Josh Norman a while back. It was the same thing. It was brutal. Right. And we don't.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what linebacker we put out there, because I saw them all. I saw Avery out there. I saw Wilson out there. And I even saw Taylor come out there. Taylor was horrible. It's such a glaring weakness, and it really... It's crucial for the middle of the field to have those guys in there that can actually play in those spaces and make tackles. And none of them could stop Fournette. We've got safeties making the tackle on Fournette. So it's just annoying.
You know, maybe getting ahead of myself, but since we're talking about the linebackers and it's such a glaring weakness for us, we have a trade go through. And who do we see? Who do we receive back for? Not Jordan Hicks. I don't even know if Jordan Hicks is still
in
Arizona.
But he's killing it.
You know. Not Jordan Hicks. We don't get Jordan Hicks back or something like that. We get a corner, and we have 2 solid corners. That's not our problem right now. So if you're going to trade somebody away as beloved as Zach Ertz, you would think you would get something that you need. I think it was like a 5th round or something like that.
Exactly.
With the corner or something. But
and the corner
it
was.
It didn't help us immediately. Yeah. They, you know, Arizona got better. We didn't with that trade. Yeah. And that pick, come on, man. We don't know what that pick is going to be. So, or who that person's going to be, but it's going to be a late rounder. We're giving up Zach Ertz, you know, Philly legend now. You know, you score a touchdown in the Super Bowl, you're a Philly legend. But anyway, you would hope at least. It's such a glaring weakness that you're going to go out and actually get something that you need. And even when we put a trade through, we still don't even get what we need that can even, you know, help us catch the Cowboys right now. So
And we're going to talk a little bit more about Zach Ertz later on, but you're right. The Eagles, if you didn't and weren't aware, Eagles traded Zach Ertz. If you're an Eagles fan, you were probably aware. I think it was a day of mourning for a lot of Eagles fans out there. And we knew it was coming because we knew he was a free agent at the end of this year. And we kind of felt that they were going to trade him before the season started. And this was one of those things where I think it was Howie just trying to get something because he wasn't going to, everybody knew he was going to be a free agent. So you had people banging down the door. Maybe he could have got a 4th if you tried. I don't know. But yeah, they got the 5th round pick and then the corner from Arizona who was drafted in like the 6th round. So essentially they got a 5th and a 6th rounder for an all-pro, 3-time all-pro tight end that has the record for receptions by a tight end in a single season. So they did. I tell you what, I know you've got Zach Ertz on your fantasy team. I'm telling you, that's he's just going to be better with Arizona with Kyler Murray throwing
him. I think he is. I think he is too, man, because Max Williams had a few. And even in this game, even if we stick to this game, Zach Ertz could have had a hell of a game, even this game. But Hurts missed so many throws in that first quarter. You know, so either we get back to the game in general. In those five three and outs that they had, man, you see Ertz missing Devontae Smith so many times. He's wide open. He's taking the check down. What I'm starting to notice, man, is that his reads are predetermined, almost pre-snapped, and he's just going there. I think that's why you see some very tight throws, because there was so many times where Sanders, Ertz, Smith, there were some plays where this is a touchdown if you just look up. And every quarterback goes through that. I'm not saying that, you know, he's going to be 100% or any quarterback is 100%. You watch any game, you're going to have a receiver with his hand up saying, you miss me. Okay, I'll come back to you. But it's we don't improve on it. We don't, you know, do you get the next possession, and then, you know, and then when your team is down 28-7, you start to feel that tightness and everything starts to press. So it just goes back to early, you know, conversations that we had about slow starts. It's another half where Hurts doesn't even eclipse 100 yards passing. You know, it's disappointing, man. Another half where, you know, and if you're going to beat the Bucs, you were going to need to pass the ball, because that would mean you would get more first downs and you would keep him, you know, Brady off the field, which we did none of the above, you know. So his misses are becoming just, they're stacking up as the games go on. They're really stacking up. Just the misreads. I think that's where I go back and forth, where I'm like, man, you know, you watch the bird's eye view of some of these plays, not just what you see on TV, but, you know, you can look around and some places give you the bird's eye view and you like, man, you know, this offense is not that bad at times. There are some glaring misses. And just going back game after game, first quarter, how many of those sevens did we miss?
Yeah.
So that means the offense is there, but we have the miss, and we've settled for three. And it seems like the only time Hurts comes alive when he's running a very fast, up-tempo offense, and he's able to run. He out-carried Sanders again this game, 10-9.
Yes.
So it's like, look, at this point, then, you know, maybe we go 50-50 with Hurts. You know, maybe we go 50-50 with Hurts, just going, you know, forward into the game in general. I don't know, but he's missing the downfield throws all year and the reads for them as well, too. So it's like, but I also don't think that Flacco is the answer. I mean, I think Minshew is going to give us a mixed bag of, like, highlight plays with, like, really bad plays like he did in Jacksonville when they went 1-16. You know, they still only won one game last year in Jacksonville. So, you know, man, you know, when you text me, you know, where do we go from here? So many levels of it.
I think that Sirianni takes some of the blame, too, and he can't get off the hook completely for what's going on, because Hurts has the raw talent, but he needs that mentorship. He needs somebody getting in his face. And all I heard what annoys me is sometimes Sirianni just doesn't say the right things, and I don't think he thinks about what he's saying. And when because he's talking to the fans, whenever he's talking to the press, he's talking to the fans. So he was asked, why aren't you running the ball more? Why aren't you working with Hurts to try to get him better in the pocket? Well, and Sirianni's answer is, I don't want to take away his superpowers. And that's fine and good. I get it. He's got a lot of raw athletic ability, but your job is to get the best out of him, and your job is to put him in positions to win. Now, if he's making those mistakes where he's doing a one-read offense, I think part of it comes down to, and it's funny because one of the people I love to follow on Facebook and social media is Brian Westbrook, longtime running back of the Philadelphia Eagles, one of my favorite players of all time. So every week after the games, what he does is he does a recap himself, a breakdown of certain highlights, and label, you know, shows them out what they need to be doing. And one of the things he said this week is that if you watch the number of plays that the Eagles run and the percentage of RPOs that they run, what it does is it creates an imbalance in their offense, because you're putting everything on Hurts to make that decision. We talked about it, I think, last week, to make that decision on whether to give the ball to Sanders or to you know, pull it out and make a play himself. And Hurts's instinct, and rather than he's reading the ball the right way, is to make the play himself. So you're getting a lack of carries for Sanders. And so, and that's what ends up happening. I think Sanders had one carry in the first half for 1 yard. That's ridiculous. Right. And you're in a game against Tom Brady and the Bucs, and your running back has one carry in the first half. I'm almost starting to make me mad when I think about it. And so the thing is what Westbrook was saying on his social media this week was like, you can't up the carries for your running back if you're always running RPOs, because you're not leaving it open for those just designed run plays that are set up for Sanders to be able to go through the line, and that you can disguise as passes.
Maybe what he's also talking about, when you're a lineman, so I'm going to just make a parallel since you're there. A couple of the penalties that we got this year were an eligible receiver downfield. Those RPOs contribute to that versus linemen love to run. If you talk to a lineman, they're going to say run the ball every play because they know I can just smash the person right in the mouth that's in front of me. All I need to know is the snap count in the hole, and I can just boom. I don't have to think. I don't have to see who's blitzing. I don't have to pick up two men or three. I can just punch the person right in front of me right in the mouth. And that's a great point by Brian Westbrook, that when you do those RPOs, even the line is in a space where they don't know, smash the person in the mouth or drop back because it's a pass.
There was one play in particular where it was the one carry for 1 yard in the first half that Westbrook points out, and he shows that because these linemen are in this RPO mode, it does put them out of position. And you see Kelce and Dickerson side by side, and they split off because they don't know whether they're pass blocking or run blocking. So there's a hole there for a brief moment. And then as soon as Sanders sees it and goes through it, they move away, and Vaitai Vea is right there in front of him and just puts him down. And that happened more than once until the fourth quarter, where Sanders just went off. And a lot of those runs in the fourth quarter looked to be more designed runs. And so I do think Hurts shoulders a lot of the blame, because what we're seeing is what we've seen all year. We've seen a lot of underthrow balls. The pass interference that Rager got was a very underthrown ball. And the only reason he got it was because Rager stopped and the defender ran him over. Now, lucky it led to a touchdown. And I do want to mention that that was the last touchdown for Zach Ertz in the Eagle uniform. It was a nice pick play that they were able to get Ertz in. But we don't get down there without that pass interference. And so it wouldn't have been 7-7 right off the bat. And it was a poorly underthrown ball. And I think another thing that where Nick and Hurts share both of the blame is the way they're calling this intermediate plays. I noticed that it's either a bubble screen or a swing pass or a flat pass or a 50-yard pass downfield. Occasionally you'll get a 10 to 15, maybe 20-yard pass, but most of the time their yards per play is they're trying to get these 5-yard plays. And what the defense is, they don't fear us like we fear them. The defenses aren't afraid of breaking of a big play by the Eagles because they don't fear Hurts' arm. So what they're doing is the Bucs did it clearly throughout the first half. Was every screen or bubble screen we ran, they were getting through our offensive line and through our blockers and making the play instantly. So we couldn't. I don't know how many times Quez Watkins, they threw to him in the flat, and he was laid out as soon as he caught the ball. And it was like, why do you keep going back to that when these intermediate plays, these high percentage plays aren't working? And so I don't know if that's Hurts making those calls or Sirianni. I'm not saying that Hurts is calling audibles. I'm saying that in an RPO type setting, if Hurts is making the calls to do the flat passes and stuff like that. But I do think that they have to be more creative in their offensive design to maybe get Hurts a little bit more room to maneuver, because we can't say that he isn't getting time. Although I did see again, and I don't know, I'm very glad that it looks like we're going to get our right tackle back, because I can't take much more Dillard. I don't know how many times I saw Shaq Barrett coming off the line and blowing Dillard up and forcing Hurts to end up running wide.
Did you see the one where Dillard didn't even get off the line?
Yeah.
And Shaq Barrett just ran right past him and tackled Hurts?
Yeah.
I mean, imagine how you feel if you're Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, that's where we go back and forth, because we do have some poor line play at times. The reason why I'm putting so much on Hurts is because when you don't put up 100 yards back-to-back games when there were yards to be had, got to hold you accountable for it. There's this one play where Hurts has the pocket is clean. And he runs out of the pocket to run back into the clean pocket. It was just like the craziest thing I've seen. Like, he runs out of the pocket. It was a clean pocket.
Yeah.
Runs back into the clean pocket and then runs up the field.
I did see that.
I just start to really question, you're running out of a clean pocket. I mean, he darted out of a clean pocket. So either you don't trust your line, because remember I told you last week, Maialata didn't get off the ball one play, and Hassan Reddick got just walked right past him. Then you had another display by Dillard where he never got off the ball. He didn't even move. I mean, at some point, bruh, when you see somebody running past you, how about you move? At some point, move. Even if, you know, it's two things here. If you're Dillard and a defensive end move, why wouldn't you move? If anything, he's off sides. Why wouldn't you move? Why wouldn't you react to a person running right past you? It doesn't matter the snap count. If he comes off first in the neutral zone, you fire off the ball too. Now you have a free shot at Hurts. So I wonder if that's some the reasons why Hurts would run out of a clean pocket, because maybe he just does not trust the process in the pocket. You know, so hopefully bringing Lane Johnson back, maybe he has a little more confidence. Everybody can go back to their natural positions that they were in training camp and preseason. And hopefully we can get some confidence back. But it seems like we're either getting garbage time yardage or it's Hurts running the ball or bust. And
right.
To your point earlier, when you said it could be a screen pass, a dump off, or a 50-yarder, I think that's why when we do mix in those little 15-yard hooks where we got the person just wide open between the safety and the corner, I think that's why we can get those plays sometimes, because they're thinking, just like you're saying, this is either going to go short or long. Oh, man, we have an intermediate throw. Where did that come from? And that's normally that Devontae Smith,
right,
Goddard, or Ertz. And that's where when we look good on offense, we got those intermediate throws throughout the game. So, I mean, just – something has to be a mix there, but there's a mixed bag, but none of it looks good.
No.
None of it looks good.
And I don't want to dump everything on Hurts. I think there's a lot of blame to be spread around, but when you look at his numbers, 12 of 26 for 115 yards, he's going to have some of that blame. And then he had the really bad pick to Dean that we just completely overthrew Rager. I think it was Watkins, and Watkins ended up having to play defense on that play and still couldn't make the play on it. It was really badly overthrown, and that just puts him in right. And that was right near at the end of the half where they had a chance to get some points on the board going in, and then they give the ball back to Tampa Bay and they come right down the field and score. So that was a 14-point swing that could have made a big difference for the Eagles and could have gone into half tied at 14, and if they would have scored. But regardless, they turn the ball over there, give it to Brady, who comes down. So he's got to shoulder a lot of that blame. He's got to do better. Another thing that has to be said is this was the 31st ranked pass defense in the NFL. 31st. And they were badly injured all over their defensive backfield. And the guys that were playing, I think, had maybe one or two starts for him this season at all. Dean is not a regular starter. And yet, Hurts managed 115 yards. The game plan had to have been way off for what they wanted to do for that, because they didn't pick on these guys enough. And even when they did, they weren't making the plays. I will say I did notice these guys were a little grabby and the refs weren't making the calls. And they had a really good technique. If you really watched what they were doing, they were using the hands on the arm. They were doing that and trying to get away with it. But what I noticed, if it was close quarters, like down around near the goal line, I saw a lot of them would interlace their arms. They would kind of wrap their arms, like instead of grabbing them, they would just put their arms and hook their arms with their arms so it looked like it was a natural thing. It was a pretty good technique, who's ever teaching them that, because then the refs weren't calling anything because it just looked like their arms got tangled up when it wasn't clearly intentional. So there was some bad missed calls. One of the worst ones was the one, I believe it was Watkins in the end zone, where Dean just smacked him in the face. I don't know if you saw that. It was like late in the game. But they did end up scoring a touchdown on the play afterwards. That was the one where Hurts did the option read and went in. But the play right before that, the ref's looking right at it. And right. Dean, and I think Troy Aikman said, if you want to know what pass interference is, that's what it is right there. When you put your hand on somebody's helmet and push it and keep them from completing a pass. So they were grabby, but that's no excuse.
When you're not playing good ball, you don't get the calls.
True.
That's in any sport, man. You know, those calls come with playing good football. And when you're not playing good football, the refs is like, yeah, sure, buddy. They're just not giving you the benefit of the doubt. But when you're playing well, you get the benefit of the doubt. That's in every sport. Overall, garbage time points, yeah. At the end of the day, it was 28-7. And, like I said, Brady's on the sideline, just, relaxed. He doesn't look bothered at all. No sacks. It's almost like if Hargraves can't get to him, we don't get a sack.
No.
So we have a lot of improvement. Overall, this is going to be a tough game anyway, no matter how you slice it. I do appreciate the fight to the end. Still, you don't want a team that quits either.
No.
So a team that's still fighting to the end, even if it's garbage time, it's still playing time. And hopefully it builds confidence going into the game against the Raiders, man.
I agree. So. And so to kind of sum up as far as like the defensive side of the ball, I do want to give, because we did give them, we hammered them a little bit, and we know where the weakness is at linebacker. But I do want to give them a shout out, even though we didn't get a lot of pressure on Brady. I thought Slay and Nelson and even Epps coming in playing for Harris, who went down, they played outstanding. Epps had the interception that was overturned, I thought was an interception. Looking at it, it looked to me like, yeah, the ball hit the ground, but he had control of it. That was on the play where Fletcher actually put pressure on Brady. Singleton bumped Howard off the ball, and then Epps, I thought, intercepted it. That would have put them in a really good position. And we had other plays like that as well. You had the Harris interception right before the half. There was in the second half where Brady had the fourth and two and needed to convert, and the defense stopped him and forced him into a bad throw to Antonio Brown. So they made stops. The problem, like we said, you said earlier at the beginning, was that every time they made a stop, the Eagles would go three and out, and they'd end up right back on the field and eventually trying to stop Leonard Fournette, trying to stop their screen game when they were gassed. They couldn't keep up with all the Tampa Bay players because they were fresh and these guys had been out there the whole game. 40 minutes compared to 20 minutes of time that the Eagles put on time of possession. The defense was out there 40 minutes trying to survive and to only give up 28 points, to be able to hold them to 7 points in the second half and to give the Eagles a chance, to me, showed guts. And I think that it shows a way forward. They just got to fix the linebacker stuff, because until they do that, we're going to continue to get run on, and that's going to be a problem. But I do want to give them credit where credit is due. I do think that was impressive. Overall, like I said, second half, we came back. We ended up, the Eagles ended up, you know, coming out in the third quarter, not doing much. Again, a lot of three and outs, but then they did get the late touchdown in the third quarter. Again, it was kind of funny how it happened, because the defense just kept stopping Brady. So the Eagles get a touchdown in the third, and then come right back in the fourth quarter late in the game with like 6 minutes to go and put up another one and then go for two, which, again, disagree with. I don't see why you go for two there. Whatever. I get that if you get the ball back and you score a touchdown, you win the game. But I'm like, if you don't get the two-point conversion, you need a two-point conversion to tie, which would have been horrific had that happened. But they get it. Give them credit. And then even the announcers were going, how did we get here? How did we get to 28-22?
They said the same thing against Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, like, man, no matter what Kansas City did to us, it seems like towards the end of that game, the Eagles were still one possession away
right
from taking the lead or losing. And we gave up points each time.
Exactly. So, you know, ended up 28-22 and needed to stop. Again, with the self-inflicted wounds that bothered me, Avery getting up on Fournette's face when he knows the taunting call is going to be made. That's, again, we have another discipline issue with these guys where they know that they need to stand up, turn around, and walk away from the play. You don't need to get in Fournette's face because you were able to tackle him for a two-yard gain. It's ridiculous to even do that when you're losing. And now you've given up 15 yards on that taunting, and now they're almost to midfield when we needed a stop. And I'm like, this is the kind of thing that loses football games, because you're there within 6 points and then you do something like that. And I'm, you know, at the end of the game, I thought the defense still played well in spite of that, because Brady had a 3rd and 7. They had him as 3rd and 7. Jonathan Gannon calls timeout. They get that stop. Eagles get the ball back. And I thought that, again, rushing 4, flushed Brady out. He made a beautiful pass to Brown because Nelson was there and Epps was there, and the ball just went right past both of them and right into Brown's arms. Boom, first down, and that was all she wrote. They ran out the clock, and we ended up losing another one. But we wouldn't have been there without that defensive performance. So I don't want to – I know Whitten, earlier we did talk about their issues, and there are issues, but they definitely are the ones that put the team on their shoulders this week. I don't know what you think, but that's kind of the way I saw it.
Nah, man. I mean, you know, just like it's like I was saying before, I like the way they finished on both sides of the ball. You know, we still didn't get a sack that game, and it was always going to be hard. You know, if you don't get a sack, you know, because your quarterback, you know, our quarterback has given up 2 sacks a game the last 5 games. Hurts has taken at least 2 sacks a game. So, you know, you have to match that energy, you know, with the other side of the ball is giving up. But like I said, this was always going to be a tough battle playing against the Bucs. The final score doesn't really, you know, show what all happened throughout the game. They definitely took their foot off the pedal a little bit. But, yeah, man, overall, I like the fight at the end. you know, which we've done in every game. We haven't. I will say one thing about this team: they won't give up. At least they don't like. They may play really bad at times, but it doesn't look like they've ever given up.
I agree.
And for a young team, you know, you like that. You like to see that from a young team and a new coaching staff as well.
I agree with you. And we'll look at the final stats here, which aren't very good. First downs are 27-16. Passing first down 17-5. Rushing first downs 8-8. I will say, as far as the rushing game goes, it was kind of that sarcastic Philly audience when Sanders got some carries in the second half where they stood on their feet and cheered because they know, like we know, we've said this, the fans aren't stupid. They know when something's wrong, and to see Sanders bust free. And just to point out that Sanders had the one carry for 1 yard in the first half. He finished with 9 carries for 56 yards and a 6.2 average. Right. Does that tell you anything? And this is against a team that is one of the hardest teams to rush against. They give up the pass, the Bucks do, but they were top 5 in rush defense. So, and Sanders in the fourth quarter was a big part of that. That last drive to make it 28-22, he came alive in that, and that was because they were handing the ball off to him. And I don't. And again, we can also say that the Bucks were playing more of a zone. They were playing more of a prevent, so it was giving us wide open lanes. But still, Sanders pulled on a heck of a performance. So then we go down to total yards. 399 for the Bucks, 213 for the Eagles. It's a total just a domination by the Bucks, and it's just sad. When you look at the passing yards, 297 to 113. Again, the completions per attempt. Brady was 34 of 42, which is just unheard of. But yards per pass, 7.1 yards per pass. It's crazy. Both quarterbacks threw an interception. No sacks for the on the Buccaneers. No sacks on Brady. Hurts was sacked twice. We gave up 102 yards, total yards rushing. This was the first game, though, we haven't given up a single 100-yard rusher, so we can actually hang our hat on that. And we didn't give up over 200 yards this game, so that was a plus. And then you look down at penalties. They actually had way more penalties than we did, 7 for 120. A lot of those were on those grabbing the arm pass interferences. They got a couple of those. So I'll give the refs credit on that. Eagles, 4 penalties for 41 yards, which is nice. It's nice to see them win the penalty.
4 for 41 and being, 4 for 41 and being on the field for 20 minutes is impressive, because some of them came from the offense as well. But, that's on the field for 40 minutes as a defense. And, I don't know the ratio, but still, even if they only have 4, you on the field, that's only one penalty every 10 minutes. It's not terrible.
Right. Yeah, and so, to be, like you said, if you look at the time of possession, 20 minutes and 4 penalties is crazy. You're right. It was a great performance in all things considered. Like you say, you look at the scoreboard, they gave up 28 points, sure, but they did a lot of things right this game. So I think that combined with the Carolina game and this game, I think that the defense is turning a corner. They just need to figure out what to do in the middle of the field with these linebackers. So that brings us to the next part of our segment. This week we mentioned that the longtime tight end of the Philadelphia Eagles, drafted in 2013, been with us for 9 years, Pro Bowler 3 times, Super Bowl champion, Zach Ertz, was traded this week to the Arizona Cardinals, who are 6-0 right now, and get a big weapon to add to their lineup. So if you combine that with Hopkins and Kyler Murray and everything they've got, it's just going to make a big difference for them. So I don't know how well he's going to play this week, because he's going to get limited snaps. But I did pick him up in one of my other fantasy leagues, not the one that we're in, because I know you have him in ours. And I'm probably going to start him, because I have Dallas Goedert as well. And we know that Dallas Goedert is under this COVID-19 protocol. He has to have 2 negative tests within 24 hours in order to play. So we may not have Goedert on the field on Sunday against the Raiders. So, but want to say a real quick thing about Zach Ertz is that he, for me, as a player, I'm wearing my Zach Ertz jersey tonight, by the way. He's always been one of my favorite tight ends. Statistically, he's the best tight end the Eagles ever have. So this is going back to Brent Celek and Keith Jackson and many others. When he was in his prime, when he was in the first few years of the Eagles, including the 2017 season, there were few tight ends that could stand up with Zach Ertz, that could outperform him at that position. He was one of those guys that redefined it. And when I looked at, he set the record in 2018 for most receptions in the NFL in a single season for a tight end. And when you look at the guys that he beat, you got Tony Gonzalez at number 8, with 96. Ben Coates in 94 with 96 receptions. Tony Gonzalez again in 2007 with 99 receptions. Jimmy Graham with 99 in 2011. Dallas Clark with 100 in 2009. At number four, Tony Gonzalez again. Talk about Hall of Famer there. 102. Travis Kelce in 2018 with 103, the same year that Ertz broke the record. And then you had Jason Witten in 2012 with 110. And then you have Zach Ertz in 2018 with 116. That's amazing company that this man is in. He's an all-time legend, and we love him in Philadelphia. And I tell you what, when I heard the news, we knew it was coming, I felt like just a pit in my stomach of knowing it was final that he was gone, that our just one of the best tight ends we ever had, our Super Bowl, scored the winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, was gone.
Yeah, man, you hate to see him go. Speaking of that, that touchdown, yeah, man, I remember that moment, man. That was I think that got reviewed just to make sure, because I think he let the ball go.
Yeah, it wouldn't hit the ground.
But he had definitely crossed. Oh, yeah. You know, he's an Eagle for life. You know, in his press conference, you know, they talked about, you know, he said he heard a bunch of rumors, like, you're going home, you're going to California. And he was like, you know, Philadelphia is home for me. You know, he's been here 8+, you know, 9 years, and Philly is home. You know, I thought he would have been cheesing a little harder because of, you know, you're going to a team that's 6-0, and he did mention that, but he also said, you know, today is about, you know, remembering or reminiscing about, you know, my time here in Philadelphia. And I think he was another player that just really understood the Philadelphia environment and really embraced that, the work ethic of, you know, just that blue collar city. But, you know, we appreciate him for sure. He will always be a legend in Philly. No doubt, man. And then, you know, moving forward, you know, he may turn into Travis Kelce out there in Arizona. You know, he could very well be Kyler Murray's Kelce. Because, I mean, if you watch Ertz this year, I mean, Goddard's more efficient at blocking, and Goddard has better hands, in my opinion. But route running from a tight end position, I think Ertz is up there with the best of them. And that's how you can set an NFL record. First, you have to be open before you catch the ball. Not all the times, but you get me.
Yeah.
You have to run a great route. And, man, I mean, you're getting a hell of a tight end. Kyler Murray is getting a hell of a tight end, a Super Bowl champion, you know, a leader. So I think he's going to bring a lot to that already loaded offense with, I mean, if you look at the backfield, you got Chase Edmonds and Connor back there. So they're always going to cause attention. And now you have Zach Ertz lining up, and then you still have, you mentioned Hopkins already.
Kirk
still, you know, can get you. And then you still have old trusty AJ Green out there that's still a good possession receiver. So this Arizona team is loaded now. And, you know, Max Williams just became a blocker because you can't take this type of talent off the field because it helps everybody around you. So, you know, good luck to Zach Ertz. He's going to a hell of a team that is playing really good football right now. And I'm sure he'll continue success, man, and get back to his all-pro raise, man, for sure.
And to finish up on him, there was a couple of things I do want to mention. Ertz's 579 regular season receptions are 12th most in history by a tight end, which is crazy. And he's only 4 catches out of the top 10. So by the time he's done, he'll be somewhere solidified in the top 10 of all time of tight ends. So definitely a future Hall of Famer. He's had 11 games with at least 10 receptions, which is unbelievable. Only Tony Gonzalez has more, which is 15. It's what I remember about Zach Ertz, and what I'll remember going away with, you know, throughout all of this is, and it probably is the same when you think about it, whenever the Eagles needed a third down, whenever they needed a big play, whenever they needed to extend the chains, it seemed like Ertz was always there. It seems like that third down guy, when they had to have a catch, when they needed sure hands and somebody open, every quarterback looked to Ertz. And granted, Wentz looked to him more than others because he knew he was going to be open. He knew he could trust him. But all the quarterbacks that he's played for, you know, valued that. And I remember the game, of course, the catch in the Super Bowl, but I also remember the game where he broke the record for receptions in a single season. And it's significant because the Eagles were playing the Texans in that game, and they needed a win against Deshaun Watson and a high-powered team to get into the playoffs. They were good in 2018. It was a year after the Super Bowl, and it looked like the Eagles were going to miss the win the Super Bowl and miss the playoffs altogether because Carson Wentz had gone down with another injury, and Ertz got the record right. He tied the record right before half and then got it right to the start of the third quarter. It set the whole tone. And Nick Foles in that game had 400 yards passing, and they ended up winning with a Jake Elliott field goal. And then it catapulted them into the game against Washington, put them right back in the playoffs. And that team was riding really high and actually, you know, barring a few things, especially with the Saints game, could have potentially got back to the NFC Championship game. And it was all around that season for him. And he was a centerpiece of that offense in 2018. So he sent a message out to the Philly fans saying thank you. He put a full-page ad in the paper and really put his heart into what it meant to be an Eagle. And, of course, we love that. And so we here at the Where Eagles There podcast want to say thank you to Zach Ertz as well. One last thing, a real quick video that Zach Ertz put out, want to share with everyone. This was on his the Philadelphia Eagles TikTok. And this was just his goodbye message to the fans of Philadelphia.
My time in Philadelphia has been the best experience I've ever had. I came here when I was 22, drafted, second round, me and Lane.
With the 35th pick in the 2013 NFL Draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select Zach Ertz.
Looking back at the past 8 years, it's just been a lot of fun. There's nothing I would change. This city is the best city to play for. And I couldn't have asked for a better experience. The city means a lot to me. It means a lot to my family. And I'm thankful.
So that final press conference was like extremely emotional, to say the least, when he was saying goodbye to the fans and the family that he's made here in Philadelphia. So we're very appreciative for what he did as an Eagle. So thank you, Zach, pretty much. I'm getting a little verklempt. Listening to that, but we move on. You know, this is the second time we've done this season. We did the shady thing, and that was rough. I can't take many more of these this year. This has to be the last Eagle we say goodbye to for a while. So anyway, getting into the next segment for our Where Eagles Dare podcast, and it's one of my favorites. It is one of the things that we affectionately call the stupid news. Headline of the week. And this one, the main reason I bring it up, there were several stupid news headlines. There was one that we talked about before the podcast where a reporter asked Aaron Rodgers, does he regret saying to the city of Chicago, I still own you, which I thought was ridiculous, but it wasn't enough to make the stupid headline of the week compared to this one. The Cowboys running back Ezekiel, this is from the USA Today, calls out refs following an OT win over the Patriots. The reason this is a stupid news headline of the week is because it's the Dallas Cowboys complaining about bad officiating.
Of all teams.
And if you're a longtime Eagles fan, and, you know, I have friends that are Cowboys fans, they will attest to this. They get the most home cooking of any team in the league. So the Patriots got quite a bit of home cooking during the game against the Cowboys. I'll admit that. And it came down to the very end, and the Cowboys had to overcome some penalties. They had over 100 yards in penalties compared to like the Patriots 40 some yards. But Zeke says that they felt like they had to overcome the Patriots and the Zebras. And that just makes, I tell you what, I belly laughed when I saw it, because it's like, it doesn't make any sense for you to be saying stuff like this. And one of the things that this headline bothers me is because if the Eagles were to do this, if the Eagles were to come out after the Tom Brady thing and complain about how the Dean and the other corners were holding their arms down, which they were, would that make the USA Today? Would that make the sports section in the USA Today? No.
Not at all. Not at all.
If any team did it, except maybe a few of the headliner teams, like if the Patriots did it or one of the marquee teams, it maybe makes news. But the Cowboys, of course, going to get this press, which is ridiculous, because teams complaining about officiating is not news. And that's why it's the stupid news headline of the week. What do you think about this?
Let me see. Brian Fluharty? Brian Fluharty was obviously up against a deadline that he could not fulfill for USA. So he said, you know what? He said, you know what? If I put a Cowboys headlines up, it doesn't matter. Cowboys fans are going to click on it. It just proves that he was just playing to their fan base. He was definitely meeting the deadline, and he just threw anything out there. This is like turning in your assignment at 11:59 p.m. right here with this article. So yeah, man, the Cowboys is going to make news.
It's like when my kids, when they were still kids, they had homework and they hadn't done it all weekend, and then they had to rush and do it the night before and turn it in with, you know, and honestly, they usually did a good job because they could make up stuff like this and BS a little bit. And that's what they're doing here. This is a non-story. And what is even sillier is that the Cowboys won in overtime 35-29, and it still made a story. They won. So it'd be maybe even different if they had lost because of a controversial call, but it's not. And it's just not even one call that they single out. It's just, he just says the officiating was bad, and that's the whole news story.
And you want to know what makes this even more? If you watch, it says originally posted on Larry Brown Sports by Steve Del DeVecchio.
Yeah.
So he even stole this poor article from somebody else. This is, we talking about copying.
Yeah.
We talk about 11:59. This is textbook 11:59. You called up one of your classmates and said, "Hey, look, I'm really behind on this. Can you send me anything you have? I'm not going to turn it in just like this, but if you can send me anything, that'd be great."
And that's what it is. And you know, the thing is, the reason we started that segment was because I see these every week and they just drive me crazy. And there's true news stories out there, but it's like the lazy journalists that just have to have something to meet the deadline or just put something out there. So they come up with this and they make it sound like it's a news story when it isn't. So that was our stupid news headline of the week. And so now we've come into our game preview segment of the week. And this week we've got yet another tough opponent. It doesn't get any easier for the Eagles. They cannot take a breath. They cannot rest because they have the Las Vegas Raiders in the middle, in the heart of Las Vegas. So they're probably doing a lot of gambling, staying up late, drinking, going to see the showgirls. So this is going to be a rough game for them. But one of the things we like to do each week when we're facing a new opponent is find a good meme to kind of, you know, poke the opponent a little bit and make fun of them. And this one, this meme of the week, is one of my favorites. And all you have to really do, if you know anything about the Raiders, is their owner, Mark Davis, who is Al Davis's son, is the current owner. And he has the worst bowl haircut in the history of anything. After Dumb and Dumber, who had the worst bowl haircut, or Mo from the Three Stooges. Mark Davis, you see this grown man, this multimillionaire in his box, and he looks like a child. So we found a great meme. And the meme of the week is a picture of, we cannot confirm or deny that if it is Mark Davis or not. And this will actually, for our podcast listeners, this will be our screenshot for the podcast, so you'll be able to see this. But it is a young redheaded boy with a bowl haircut in a band uniform, and this beautiful photo with the one picture looking out and the other picture is a profile. And it says, "Someday I will own the Las Vegas Raiders." So that's what he aspired to all those years when he was in the band costume.
Every time I see Mark Davis, I'm like, there's no way he's ever stepped foot in a classroom in his entire life. He's been homeschooled. Al Davis is no way. I mean, he does look goofy. Every time I see him, I always have to kind of double take. Like, who is that guy? I'm like, man, you know, he must live a rock star life. He must just wake up and say, you know what? Doesn't matter. I'm rich. So yeah, every time I see him up in the box, I think it was a few games back, he had Charles Woodson up there with him. Charles Woodson was standing next to him, and I think it was the Baltimore Ravens game.
Okay.
And Charles Woodson was in the booth with him when they had that crazy, remember how crazy that I think it was the first game of the season for him, that Ravens game, that overtime game. Right,
because they were honoring Woodson and everything and had him at the game. Yeah, I remember that.
Right. So I just remember them panning to him a couple times up there in the booth, and I was like, man, this dude looks goofy, man. Just goofy, man. Anyway, my brother's going to be at this game,
too. Oh, really?
He's going to be at the game. He's a Raiders fan.
Oh, no.
So he's going to be at the game. They're going out to Vegas, and he's going to be, at least like last time I talked to him, he told me he was going to be at this one. So I expect to see a picture, definitely, of the scoreboard if they win, with a little selfie or something. The scoreboard in the backfield, but I think we got a good shot. Just kind of going into the game. Yes. I know you normally lead us in, but just going into the game general, man, I think we have a shot to win this. You know, you consider they lost to the Bears. That gives me hope. Any team that lose to the Bears, because I think Justin Fields played that whole game. That was like Justin Fields' first game. Dalton started the game, but I think Fields finished the game. Mm. And they still only managed to put up 9 points against a struggling Bears offense. I don't know, man. I like the Eagles' chances this week. I really do. This is not even a biased approach. I think it's a toss-up. I think if our defense can play well, I think their strengths are our strengths in somewhat where they almost need 300-plus to win a game, almost 300-plus yards to win a game. And that's our strengths where we don't allow a lot of teams to get over 300 yards a game on us from a passing-wise. So I just hope, you know, Jacobs and Drake doesn't kill us. You know, Jacobs hasn't been having a good season. He's still there, short line, you know, running back where he can just punch it in. Overall, man, I think if we can get somebody other than Hargraves to get a sack, because Hargraves with 6 sacks have half the Eagle sacks right now, half of their sacks. We got to get some more guys involved, you know, coming off a game where nobody really, you know, a little pressures here and there on Brady, but, you know, for the most part, Brady was untouched, unbothered, rather. We can't let Carr have all that time back there because they love to throw. Like I said, they're averaging over 333 yards a game. So what you think, man? What you think is going to happen during the game? What's your predictions leading up to this?
It's interesting because after what happened with Tampa Bay, you're kind of in a really low place. Then you do have to take a step back and go, it was Tampa Bay. Now, granted, they have a really bad pass defense and we did nothing. So that's going to be key under how we attack the Raiders defense. The Raiders defense is banged up as well. They have injuries all across their front seven. So that's going to help us out. And they've got injuries to corner. They had a couple of guys on injured reserve. So again, we got another opportunity, but again, it comes down to how the Eagles game plan against that defense. On the other side of the ball, Derek Carr is a capable quarterback. You know, I have him in fantasy, but I even benched him this week against the Broncos and put in Carson Wentz instead because he's been bad the last two games. The game against Chicago, I think he had just barely over 150 yards, somewhere around there. I don't have the exact number, but it wasn't a good performance. They lost 20-9 at Chicago. And like you said, now Chicago's defense is phenomenal. But again, this is supposed to be a good, good team in the Raiders, and they're not putting up points. I think having like Josh Jacobs back is going to be good for them. And again, being home, that's going to affect him. He's got to get up to speed. Last week against the Broncos, he wasn't quite there yet. But Kenyon Drake, like you said, is coming on. As far as receivers go, they've got, Hunter Renfrow and Henry Ruggs. They don't really inspire fear into a lot of people. The big one that you have to watch out for is Darren Waller, who is one of the better tight ends in the league. And again, I think we need corners and a linebacker against Darren Waller. You need a corner and a linebacker on him and maybe a nickel corner at somebody to make sure that you've put people around him to keep him from making plays in the open field. Because if we leave that middle open for Darren Waller, it's going to be a long, long day. So if you have Darren Waller, you may want to start him on your fantasy. However, all that being said, I do think our defense can be opportunistic. I think they're coming into themselves as far as generating turnovers. We need to hopefully blitz a little bit in this game to get Derek Carr a little nervous. I don't think Jonathan Gannon will respect Carr as much or the downfield ability. Could hurt us if they get a deep one to Ruggs because Ruggs can go deep. But I think that he's going to play a little bit more pressure, I hope. And I think that the Eagles could come away. They're actually, the spread on this game is the Eagles are getting 3 points at Oakland. And I'm going to take those three, and I'm going to go with the Eagles this week. And I'm not being a homer. It's just what I see, because when you look at their schedule over the course of the season, they beat the Ravens in that first game. And that was an overtime game. That was a really good game on, I believe it was a Monday night game. And that was the one, like,
hell of a game. Overtime, crazy comeback by Lamar Jackson. It was crazy.
Yes, yeah. And so that was before the Ravens are who they are right now. Ravens are killing it right now, and they were just getting started at that point. And then the Raiders beat the Steelers 26-17. And we know the Steelers are struggling this year. They beat Miami 31-28 in OT, which, again, we know what Miami's like this year. And then, again, they lost to the Chargers 28-14 and lost to the Bears before winning at Denver 34-24 last week. And a lot of people were picking the Broncos to win that game because of the way the Raiders had been playing. So, yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to go with the Eagles this week. I think that they've got a shot.
Even with that point spread that you have up there, This is probably a 1.5 spread if Eagles are at home. The Raiders are at home, and they're still only getting 3 points.
Exactly. The rule is if you're home, you get 3 points.
You get three anyway.
So that means this is even. This is even money right now.
Right, right, right. So, I mean, looking at the game last week, because the Raiders were in town, you know, Teddy Two Chains, old Teddy Bridgewater, a lot of it was garbage time, I will admit, but he still hit him for 334 yards. Like I said, a lot of it was garbage time, and they also picked him off three times as well, too. So there was a mixed bag coming from Teddy Bridgewater, but I think we have what it takes to beat the Raiders. I don't really see this as a lopsided game. I think we have enough to beat the Raiders. I think Kenyon Drake, you know, got to watch him out of the backfield. You don't want to give up any of those dip-off plays. But like I said, man, if we can maybe get – the only person that can take the top off is Ruggs for the most part. So maybe this is where our single high safety helps us a little bit, because Renfrow, you know, he's going to run a lot of slants and whatnot and quick and comeback routes and stuff like that. He's still a hell of a receiver, hell of a possession receiver. But, you know, going back to – to even Hurts has had 2 sacks. I've already mentioned this. You know, some of my concerns is that they sacked Teddy Bridgewater 5 times last week, and Hurts has been giving up at least 2 sacks a game. So, but we talked about Lane Johnson coming back. Hopefully, Maialata goes back to where he's supposed to be, and everything can just kind of settle down. And then they can, you know, we got the young boys on the inside at the guards, and let's just work from there. Let's just work. But right now, the tackles aren't giving Hurts a lot of confidence. We at least know back-to-back games that our line is giving up a block without even getting off the snap. That's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. That can't happen. Those are ways that the Raiders can win this game, because they lost back-to-back games, you know, even this year. The glaring game, and the reason why I go back to the Bears games, because Justin Fields didn't have a great game at all. You know, I'm not even sure if he cracked 200 yards.
Right.
So what I want to see from the Eagles, man, I want to be able to turn on the Eagles game and have and expect something. Either expect a run. I would rather, you know, I don't want to compare him to Lamar, but at least when you turn on the Ravens game, you kind of know what to expect at this point. You know, they're comfortable with all of Lamar's capabilities. And he's been coming on to the fact where even if you stop the run, his arm can light up in the second half. So, but they will always play to Lamar's strengths throughout the entire game. I feel like we start out maybe not playing to Hurts' strengths a lot of times in the game. We try to make him make reads that he isn't making down the stretch of the game where we see him at his best or at his most fluid. You know, we look at fluidity.
Right.
Those 3 and outs that come from a lot of doubts, man. When you look at that last game, Hurts missed a lot of throws that you would think, bruh, if they're in this coverage, surely this is open. And so basically, if it's a cover two and he's going to the under route, it's almost like they know he's going to go to the under route as well. And it goes back to your point where dump offs, little drop offs, and or bombs. And it's like teams are just guarding against that. You also mentioned with the Raiders corners being out, last week they were on their second, third, and fourth string corners, mm-hmm. and they still got 3 interceptions. So, with a new coach. So, there is some consistency there. I thought they looked better last week than they have all season, if I'm honest. I mean, at least offensively, you know, Kenyon Drake got more burn than he's had all year in that one game, and it paid off for him. They look better. I don't know if it's because of Gruden or not. I don't know what it is because, but I know the offense changed slightly. It's least personnel-wise. So I think if we have a game like Carolina or Atlanta or even the a Kansas City game where our offense played really well throughout that entire game. So whatever we did there versus whatever we've been doing in garbage time, if we can just try to consolidate that, I want Sirianni to get out of his head and prove the Eagles fans a liar by going ahead and just, instead of doing all those RPOs, where there's a lot of fuzziness in the line and it's not high efficiency. At the end of the day, we aren't being that efficient with the RPOs. Right. So change it.
Yeah.
Go to something more traditional where our very healthy line knows what the play is before the snap. We're passing. We're running. Start from there. You're putting a lot on Hurts to run those RPOs. And I think I think you may need to help your young quarterback, or we got to, something isn't right. Either Sirianni or Hurts, and something isn't right. I do like the way we're going forward, but I don't know, man. I just really don't know, because we know we can beat this team. We know we can beat these Raiders. We know we can, but we also know that Hurts hasn't eclipsed 100 yards in the last two first halves of the last couple games, man.
Right. I think that's the key. I think that is, what do we get out of Hurts? If Hurts plays his best game on Sunday at Las Vegas, he could take advantage of those injured corners. And like you said, one thing you said that made me laugh right at the beginning was you want to know what to expect. And I think that's what I thought when I was watching the Tampa Bay game back again multiple times. I said, I just want a complete game. I want a game where both the defense and the offense play well at the same time. Against the Chiefs, the offense played great. The defense was just horrendous. You know, again, it's against the Chiefs, but whatever. And then against Carolina, the offense is pathetic. Defense plays great. Against Tampa Bay, the defense played adequate. The offense was, again, horrendous. I want to see them both play a complete game. I want to see the best out of both sides at one game. And I think that the Raiders, coming off of this loss, having the extra time from the Thursday night game, it's almost like a mini bye week, where you better be prepared. And I think Sirianni has better had these guys prepared to go on the road and get in there and play a team that is almost equals to them, the way I see it. So, yeah, the 3 points right there, I consider it a very equal stretch. And, again, they've got injuries. So let's take a look at the injury report to kind of show what we've got. Now, we're actually sitting fairly well. We've got Dallas Goedert out on the injured reserve COVID-19 list, and he still could play. We've got Isaac Seumalo still on injured reserve, but this week we get Kevon Wallace back. He got that stinger, or the AC joint, when he put his head down in the San Francisco game, and he's been out ever since then. He's supposed to come back this week. It looks like he's going to be cleared to play. That's huge, because what it does is, with Harris having his issues, because Harris played, but Epps had to come in for him because he had to go off a couple times. He's banged up. So you get McLeod, Harris, Epps, and Wallace, where you can rotate in and out at the safety position. That's big for us. And Kevon Wallace can play deep. He can play deep well. So if you've got guys like that against Ruggs in the deep threat, you take that away. Then we're just dealing with the run and Darren Waller. So I think that's good. One thing that'll be huge in 3 more weeks after that is getting Brandon Brooks back. Like you said, we get Lane Johnson back this week. We'll have Mailata back at left tackle, Lane at right tackle. We got Dickerson probably going to be playing guard position. We don't have Seumalo, so that's where Dickerson's going to be playing, is that side of the guard. So we'll have Herbig in there and then Kelsey. So we still got a couple of weaknesses. We're not going to have Seumalo back, but if we could get Brooks back at that right guard spot, that's going to be huge. So, and as far as the Raiders' side of the ball, this is, like I said, they're two corners, Damon Arnette and Trayvon Mullen. Trayvon Mullen, one of the best corners. They're not expected back until week 9 for both those guys. And then you got 4 questionables. Jonathan Hankins, a defensive tackle, who's a big player for them. Nick Quiet. Kwiatkowski, I can never say his name, Kwiatkowski, the inside linebacker, he's good. Deron Lee is another good linebacker. Again, undisclosed injury for him, but they're going to be out. And Trey Quinn, one of their minor wide receivers. So they're a little bit more banged up.
Besides Mullen, I didn't really know any of those guys, if I'm honest.
You know Hankins.
I'm not saying they suck, but...
Jonathan Hankins is a pretty good defensive tackle.
Is he? Okay. Yeah. Now, I know Mullins.
Yeah.
But the rest of those guys, they weren't a... You know, they didn't jump off the radar for me. So maybe they sucked in college and in the pros.
Well, if you've got to be
every time I look at a player that I don't know, I'm like, you must have sucked in college.
I try to watch the Raiders when I can. My brother is also a big Raiders fan, so our history with the Raiders goes back. I'm not a fan, but I watch them just to see how they're doing for him. You know, when you got family, you check out their teams as well. So that's the injury report for this week. So, like you said, it looks like it's got the potential to be a Eagles victory, and so we're going to go with it. Cross our fingers and see what happens. It's a late game, 4 o'clock game, so we're gonna have to wait through the 1 o'clock to get to it. If you're on Eastern time, you're on Mountain time, so it's not as late for you. So let's cross our fingers and hope it goes our way. On the upcoming front, we've got 4 games we're looking at real quick. After the Raiders on Halloween, we at 1 o'clock on Sunday we play at Detroit. So 2 straight road games. So we're gonna be playing at Detroit on Halloween against an 0-6 team who might be 0-7. Depending on how they play the Rams. So the Lions could be going into that game desperately needing a win and maybe hoping they can get one from a underachieving Eagles team. So that could be a danger game for us. After that, it goes right back to getting tougher opponents. We've got the Chargers coming to the link, and Chargers are actually playing pretty well right now. They got kind of throttled against Baltimore, but they've played really good ball, like against Cleveland and other teams. They've played really well against the Cowboys, just barely lost. So this is a team that is a dangerous one with Justin Herbert coming to town with the high-powered offense. That's on November 7th. That's a 4 o'clock start. And then we have, in your neck of the woods, you said you're going to this game?
I already have tickets. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Wife, right here at 2:25 Mountain Time.
There you go.
For the game, man. I can't wait.
That's going to be at Denver at 4:25 Eastern at Mile High. Eagles and Broncos November 14th. And then on November 21st at 1 o'clock at the Link, the Saints come to town. So it never gets any easier. Now, granted, these are maybe a little bit easier opponents than the Buccaneers or the Chiefs, but they're still going to be battles, each and every one of them. There are no easy opponents.
I think this sets us up for, just hear me out on this, Greg. I know I'm being a little bit biased because I am an Eagles fan. I do bleed green. But realistically, we need to go at a minimum. If we want to have a shot at winning the NFC East, we have to go 4-1 through this stretch that you just showed. Whether it's the Raiders or it's whether it's the Raiders or that Chargers game. The Chargers is still a winnable game. As long as you still have a young quarterback, you can have those games. Justin Herbert, I went up against him this week, which we'll get to in fantasy. So I was looking at the game and I watched a little bit of that game. I was like, man, he is. But, you know, I watched him in Oregon two years ago, where, you know, I watched him live at I seen Herbert play when he was the Ducks quarterback against against Nebraska. I went to a Ducks Nebraska game where Herbert played. But we can win that Chargers game. I think if we can come out of this 6-5, you know, just above 500, you know, 4-1, that puts us at 6-5. I hate doing math in public. It puts us at puts us at 6-5. But if we come out of this 7-4, the league's on notice. And I think the Cowboys, the Cowboys could have stumbled against the Chargers. They got very fortunate against the Chargers. They got very fortunate against the Patriots. They looked really good against us, which gives them that tiebreaker right now, at least, or, you know, just that constant tiebreaker over us. But I think all of these games are winnable, man. I think the Lions game is winnable. I hope the Lions actually win this week, because Halloween is a perfect time to win your first game on some creepy fluke type plays. You know, if I was still in Ohio, we would be.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
100%. You know, we don't miss a game in our radius.
No. We would have gone there. I thought about going myself, but I didn't have anybody really to take the trip with me. Yeah. So I was kind of like, I'll just leave it be. It is Halloween, you know, that kind of thing. If it were a regular day, maybe I'd go up by myself. I don't know. But, yeah, I definitely would be there. I think what you're saying is right. I think they are winnable games. It depends on if this team has grown over the course. I did, when I looked at this today, and if you look at the headlines, I think it was on Bleeding Green Nation, it was announced that the Eagles' remaining schedule from here on out is considered one of the easiest in the league. Because after these four, and I'm not jumping too far ahead, is that we have the Jets, and then we've got to play our division opponents. Then we play the Giants and the Redskins, and then we finish with the Cowboys. So we play the Giants and Redskins twice and the Jets after this. So it's all to play for them. It's just a matter of, do they put everything together after what they've learned after these first six games and how rough it's been? And they've been in just about every game except the Cowboy game. Do they, you know, right the ship? And does something click where the both sides of the ball start playing better? And I think that we're still going to have a glaring weakness at linebacker, but I still think that they can adapt to that and make adjustments to overcome that. Play in some more nickel coverages, install a dime coverage, do some more disguised blitzes so that you can bring corners off the edge. Stop. I have never seen them do a corner blitz yet this year. And we've got corners like Maddox that can fly to the quarterback, but they haven't done it. Maybe they start. We'll see. So I think you're right. I think that this is a shot. If you look at the what's coming up, it looks like winnable games, and it all depends on whether they do it or not. We'll know. And I hope that everybody will be here with us to experience what happens. Win or lose, we will be here. So that brings us, we mentioned fantasy, that brings us to the fantasy results. You talked about Justin Herbert playing against him. He had a horrible game. So this was the week to play against him against that Baltimore game, because 34-6 was the final. And Lord Vader, again, your team ended up winning 181.78 to 131.60. That's pretty good. How many wins in a row is that for you now?
That's just one win in a row. Three and three.
Oh, that's right.
I've literally won every other week. I've either run into a buzzsaw or, you know, just. But I had the second most. I got the second highest points in the league behind my brother, Marine Raider. So, you know, overall, you know, my team was clicking, but all hell to the king, King Henry. I didn't need him, but I sure do appreciate him. Thank you so much for being back-to-back three touchdown games. And Leonard Fournette's been coming on so strong for me. And James Robinson had a good showing up out there in London. And Patty is Patty. I would have won the high score this week had I started Adam Thielen. But you convinced me to start Devontae Smith against the. I'm just blaming. I got to blame somebody.
31st right? Ranked defense, pass defense. You think that Smith would have had a good game?
100%. But allow me to blame somebody real quick.
Go ahead. I'll take the blame.
24 points missing here. I could eclipse. I could have 205 had I started Thielen. But Thielen, you know, he had a hell of a game, and I was a little salty. So, but anyway, back to 3-3. White Rhinos. Air Force active duty cat out there in Japan. It's my guy. Yeah, man. He was 5-0 coming into this week. So I stopped his undefeated streak.
Nice.
I stopped him.
A lot of that is Herbert that has been carrying him. I have to imagine. And then a little bit of Zeke in there as well. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, you're right. Derrick Henry, that game that we talked a little bit offline, that game against Buffalo was one of the best games of the year. That Tennessee Titan Buffalo game on Monday night. One of the best ones to watch. And we talked about him just tearing through the Bills defensive line like they were homesick. I mean, from school, because they weren't even standing. They just stood still as he went through the line. That's the way it looked like. And they said on Monday night that when he had that 76-yard touchdown run, that they clocked him at 21.5 miles per hour. That's freaking insane, Derrick Henry. So, yeah, it's nice to get that 35 points in your fantasy league. Me, on the other hand, I was the high scorer for week one, and I've lost five straight. So I lost again, 120. I just don't have the team. I really don't. You know, like I said, I've got McLaurin and Gibson not producing. I did make a good move and put in the kid Herbert from Chicago because he was filling in for their injured players. And so he scored 19 points. I had 15 out of Hockenson, and I had Wentz give me 27, but that was all I got. I didn't have any big players put anything out. So this week against the Raiders, though, talking Eagles fantasy, I think this is a kind of a week that you've got to take a shot. I've got Hurts. I'm going to give him a shot this week against. Actually, you know what? I tell you what, I got Carr, too. I don't know.
I'm starting Devontae Smith, only because I just think he's the best option. I got Thielen on a bye. Mr. Tyler Boyd hasn't played as well since T. Higgins has been back. And so with Michael Pittman as well since T.Y. Hilton came back, his touches have come down. He was Carson Wentz's leading guy, but that's not the case anymore. So right. I am, you know, for Eagles-wise, I'm going with the old Eagle, Zach Ertz, and I'm going with Devontae Smith again this week. I think they're going to have a better showing. I really do.
At 1-5, I have usually would flip a coin to choose between Derek Carr or Jalen Hurts this week. Screw it. I'm going to go with Jalen Hurts because what do I got to lose? They are playing against a banged-up defense where Jalen could use both his feet and his arm to end up scoring some points for me in fantasy. Probably won't start Miles Sanders. I think he's not a safe bet. I think that if he would, if they were running the ball, if the Eagles were running the ball regularly and he was getting 20-plus carries a game, he'd be a safe bet in fantasy. Still sitting on my bench until otherwise, unless I've got no other choice. Gibson's a big if. He's questionable. So he may get the start just by default. I did pick up Rashad Penny, who's coming back off of the injured reserve this week. So that was big for me. And then I picked up the Cleveland running back, who's going to be playing because Nick Chubb is out and Kareem Hunt is out. D'Ernest Johnson, who's going to be playing.
D'Ernest Johnson.
So I've actually already got him in the lineup. So we'll see how that goes. So that's a roll of a dice. I'm 1-5. I got nothing to lose. So that brings us to the last segment of the week, and that is our pick segment. This week, I didn't lose my lead. I'm still number one overall. I have a 240-point total. I went 8-6 against the spread in pro, which is still decent, 1-2 in college. I went 6-0 to start the first 2 weeks of college. Ever since then, I haven't done better than 1-2. So we'll see if that helps me, if anything changes this week. But I still have a pretty sizable lead over second place Chris Buddy and Roger Adamson, both at 80 points. And then we've got Darren Muir and Tim Case at 60 points. After that, we got Dustin Schmidt and CJ Clark, who was just a few weeks ago was like minus 140 and has now come up to plus 20. So we had a pretty good week this week. It was a very difficult week to pick. So that's why I was able to kind of keep my lead, because everybody kind of had a crappy week. So this week's picks going against the spread, and this is what we've got so far. And these are subject to change. I kind of made these on the fly today. I've not really looked at them that hard, but this is what I'm going with as of right now. The Thursday night game, Cleveland is at home, given 3.5 to Denver, and I am going to take the Broncos, only because the Cleveland's got so many injuries right now. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm hoping, you know, that they can win at home, but I think it may stay within that 3 points. Baltimore at home against Cincinnati. I think Baltimore will win this game, but I like what Cincinnati's doing right now, and I like them to keep it within 6 points. So I'm going to take Cincinnati getting 6.5. Carolina is on the road at the New York Giants, and they are really struggling right now. They've lost two in a row, including to the Eagles, and they're giving 3 points on the road to the Giants. So I'm going to take a chance, roll the dice, and go with the G-men getting the 3 points. I think they might win that game outright at home. After that, we've got Green Bay giving 9.5 to the Washington football team. This is in Green Bay. Washington banged up. They're not playing great football right now, so I'm going to take the Packers and the 9 and giving the 9.5 points. We got the Kansas City Chiefs on the road giving 4.5 to the Titans after their big win against Buffalo. This was a tough one. I may switch this one. I had to go back and forth. The thing is, Tennessee with Derrick Henry, when they're on, they're on. Kansas City's offense, when they're on, they're on. So can they beat Tennessee by 4.5 on the road? I'm going to say yes for now, but I'm not completely sold on that one just yet. After that, we got Atlanta giving 2.5 on the road to Miami. I'm going to take Atlanta. Miami right now, as they're getting blown up by everybody, they're really struggling. New England's giving 7 at home to the New York Jets. Again, the Jets are another one of those teams that they've got a lot to work on. They're in rebuilding mode. New England's up and coming, and I think that the new quarterback there, Mac Jones, is Mac Jones, right?
I believe it's Mac and Cheese.
Mac and Cheese. Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Mac and Cheese.
Sorry. Yeah. But is it?
So he's doing really well out there. They played really well. Gave the Cowboys a heck of a game. I actually thought they might win that game. They didn't pull it out. They lost in overtime. So I'm going to take them giving 7 at home to the Jets. After that, we got the Rams at home giving 15 to the Lions, our opponent after this week. I'm crossing my fingers and taking the Lions to cover that 15. The Lions are one of those teams that they can play to their opponent. They may not win, but they play to their opponent. So I'm going to go with that one. And then after that, we've got the our game, the Las Vegas Raiders, giving 3 to the Philadelphia Eagles. And they're at home. I'm going to take the Eagles, like we said in our pre-show there. And then we've got Tampa Bay giving 13.5 at home to the Chicago Bears. I'm going to take the Brady and Tampa Bay giving that to Chicago on the road. Again, I know that they beat the Raiders, but I'm not trusting in Chicago again. Arizona's giving 17 to Houston. As much as I hate to give up 17 points, I just don't know what Houston has for this Arizona team. Right now, they're at home, and they are so deadly at home. Could be the Arizona team that struggled with San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, or it could be the team that just is running through every single opponent. So I'm going to take my chances and give that 17. After that, we've got San Francisco on the Sunday night game. They're at home, giving 3.5 to the Colts and Carson Wentz. I'm going to go with San Francisco coming off the bye in this one and being at home. Colts have been that almost there type team this year. They play every single game to the wire, and they're almost there and don't seem to be able to get the win when they need it. So I'm going to take San Francisco giving the 3.5. And then finally, on Monday night, we have the Saints giving 4.5 at Seattle. I'm going to go with New Orleans. I'm going to go with Jameis Winston coming in there, sometimes prone to make mistakes. But you know who's really prone to make mistakes? Geno Smith. I got lucky taking Seattle, getting 4 from the Steelers. I'm not making that mistake this week against the Saints team, which is much better than the Steelers. I'm going to take Jameis going into that. As long as Geno Smith is playing for Seattle, I'm probably going to be picking the other team, because he actually cost them the game with the strip fumble that led to the Steelers winning that game in overtime and kicking the field goals. In my college this week, I've got Coastal Carolina again, riding the Coastal Carolina train. They're on the road giving four to Appalachian State. I'm taking Coastal Carolina giving that four. I've also got SMU on Friday night giving 13.5 to Tulane. I'm going to take SMU. And finally, I've got North Carolina State giving 3 points at Miami. I'm going to take NC State because Miami does not show me anything this year. And that is our picks for week seven. Anything interesting planned for you this week before the games?
Yeah, man, I got a few things, man. Hanging out with the wife this weekend. You know, October is just a big month for me in general with family wise. And then, just hanging out and really looking forward to the Eagles having a 10-day rest, going into this Raiders game. And you also got to be very mindful that the Raiders are going into their bye week as well, too. So we should get a very, very, very animated, very impact. You got a team that's knowing they're about to take a week off, and you got a guy that's coming off a 10-day rest. So hope our guys are motivated and, you know, yeah, man, really looking forward to this Raiders game. I really am looking forward to this Raiders game. I think it's a winnable game.
I think you make an excellent point. I think it is going to be, or it has the potential to be, a really, really intense showdown. As for me, my wife has given me the week off from any home improvement duties, but we've got painting and remodeling our front like entryway coming up. So I have that to look forward to, but not this weekend. So this weekend, I'm going to have a few adult beverages. I'm going to watch some college football. On Saturday, I'm going to watch some baseball, some of the ALCS and NLCS come on. Those things are going crazy right now. There's a lot to watch right now. And hockey just started back up. NBA starting back up. So if you're a sports fan, this is the busiest time of the year. So, I mean, for us, I mean, sitting in front of the TV absolutely. Doing absolutely nothing busy, but, you know, it's still busy. It's still busy. Right. It's busy right. In that way. You know, we've got a lot to watch. Right. It's important.
Right. Critiquing a bunch of professionals.
Exactly. One of my favorite commercials is the guy that's sitting on is it like a TikTok? He's sitting on his couch. He's got a big old belly and he's got Cheeto dust all over him. And then a quarterback throws the interception. He goes, ha, loser.
Absolutely.
It's one of my favorites. And that's, you know, but hey, that's what we do. And that's what we do here each and every week on the Where Eagles Dare podcast. You can check us out on, once we get out of YouTube jail, you can check us out on YouTube Live, on Facebook Live, as well as the Twitch stream if you want to see us do the live stream. You can find us on any of your podcast providers, on Stitcher, Amazon Music, on Audible, Spotify, Apple. We're on everything. So give us a like, give us a follow, and you can follow us each and every week. And if you want to give us an email to make any suggestions or just give us some feedback, you can do that at lee.bird, that's B-Y-R-D, .eaglesdare@gmail.com. And with that, my brother, any final words you got to say?
As always, fly Eagles fly.
And go Birds. Beat Las Vegas. See you next week.
Oh no! We suck again!